Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
Do you know what the worst part of the novel coronavirus was? I mean, there are a lot of bad things.
I do know, but I know you're going to tell me.
It's that Mike Lane Custom Designs went under.
They got him.
They got Mike.
They got him.
The novel coronavirus got Mike.
I don't know what Steven Soderbergh has against this man's construction business.
Fucking hates it.
He will not let it thrive.
Cannot let him build anything. You look like you have a thought, Fran.
I sort of can't believe his custom business made it to the novel coronavirus.
Made it more
but,
than a year.
But I guess there's always been a market for like furniture that looks stupid.
I was gonna ask, what would you get from like his, because I
Mike
remember
Lane home, is it home
no,
design?
No, custom design.
Mike Lane custom design. Jordan has,
I have a shirt.
A
I
Mike
have
Lane
the
custom
shirt.
Design shirt.
Yes.
That's, I mean, I would buy the shirt, I think is what I would get from Mike Lane custom designs.
Right.
It's like a, it's like the tables are made of surfboards. I really don't mm-hmm. like it, but I don't live that close enough to that kind of water culture to
Miami chic.
I don't want like a nautical yeah. themed home.
You walk in, it's like a surfboard, but like wood is on top of it somehow.
I feel like no, that's like basically like
right. there
what
was like a glass table one I know that like had something holding it up, but I don't know what it was. Right.
Listen.
Do we think Channing builds stuff in his real life?
Yes.
Yeah.
It feels like a Nick Offerman, Ron Swanson situation where they just walked in on him like sanding driftwood one day and were like, hey.
This is a good thing.
Hey, we can use this.
did you, I don't know if you guys read, but there was a new Channing Tatum Vanity Fair piece that was from
the
woman who had done the GQ piece.
The iconic GQ.
The iconic GQ piece,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, I haven't read this yet.
There are some real nice tidbits in there that we can like dig into, but like, there wasn't anything about custom design, which I was a little shocked by, but like he did go through a dirt bike painting sculpting phase. So that was sort of like his big during his retirement period, like writing a kid's book, but also getting into sculpting.
I was gonna
which
say,
I respect
the children's book is what I remember
of
from
course
his...
Sparkarella.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's like mm-hmm. the main one I know about, and obviously like the Zoe Kravitz paparazzi pics and all that.
Oh baby,
they drop girlfriend in the
Vanity Fair article.
Yeah, so it's like official, which is exciting.
That's
why great.
It's not been bigger news.
I know.
I mean,
I think they seem so low key.
I love yes. them.
I feel like they're a good couple.
I love
I think
them
so
couple.
Too. I think they're really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we'll see them both together in Pussy Island
yeah.
this year.
Yeah, in Pussy Island. Are they going to have to rename mm-hmm. that?
That would make it the second Channing Tatum movie that gets renamed for sexual innuendo purposes.
What was the first
one? The Lost City of D.
Oh, right. Oh, my God. I forgot about that. That's fucked up.
It was supposed to be The Lost City of D.
That's fucked up.
They took so much from us. Okay. We'll return
yes.
to Zoe Kravitz in a minute. I think the reason that I love her and Channing Tatum so much is because, like, that's my dream relationship.
Large, hulking man.
Who makes me laugh.
Who makes you laugh. It's kind of, like, a little himbo-y.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and has mm-hmm. the best abs on this continent.
Abs could cut wood for his custom
I'm
design.
I'm sorry, the second best abs on this continent.
Oh,
your
fiance is listening and you don't want to...
Just in case.
Understandable,
who
okay.
does have a very good set of abs. Anyway, hi!
Okay.
I'm Brooke Solomon.
Humble brag, Jordan Gustafson.
I'm digging myself into a hole and I need
you
to
can't
get out
of
it.
You
no,
gotta get out of it.
No. We love talking about cinema.
Mm-hmm.
We love talking about being queer. Mm-hmm. We love talking about queer cinema. Here we are talking about it questionably on mic, on Magic Mic. They do have a magic microphone pun in this movie, which I will get into today.
I thought they did in the last one too, though.
Did they? I don't remember.
Oh my God, they keep doing it.
XXL.
They keep bringing it out.
I think
out.
It's like a Jada Pinkett. I think it's always in like the MC.
Yeah.
Okay, Jada Pinkett though in XXL. My God,
dude,
what a
we had
fucking
a whole,
performance.
We had a whole XXL episode. This is
Fran did not get to talk
this
XXL
is, this
though,
is true.
So I feel like Fran can like weigh in. So therefore, we can like revisit you know, one of our finest masterpieces.
Okay, so secret, maybe secret double bill episode, but mainly we are here to talk about the 2023 new release, Magic Mike's Last Dance. It's the reintroduction and the conclusion of Channing Tatum.
We're done? No more Channing Tatum films?
No, I mean, you know.
Did you guys do Magic Dog? Mike.
No.
Not yet.
Well, there you go. Do you think there's anything queer in Dog?
There's not.
I would imagine not.
Having was there on opening night to me and maybe four other people, there was nothing gay about Dog.
Were you really there on opening
night? Of course
night?
I was.
Okay. And we are joined. the way you said that,
you're so mad at me.
Today by Fran Hoffner, CEO, editor-in-chief of Fran Magazine.
That's right. That's right. I'm a business.
It's a business. It's an empire.
Mm-hmm. Are you the Salma Hayek or the Channing Tatum of Fran Mag? Who do you, you know?
I mean, considering Mike Lane custom design goes under, is not doing too
well.
Yeah, I think I'm the Salma Hayek, but it's not like I like inherited a Substack after a messy divorce. That would be a funny thing to inherit.
It would be. Ooh, there's something in there, a little short.
There's always money in the Substack.
That's true.
Love it. I love it.
Delighted.
Welcome back.
To have you
Thank
here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I was thinking about this like right before we hopped on. So you were first on for the Jump Streets for Channing, which I feel like is why we brought you back.
One of the reasons.
And then Stardust, and then this. I was like a little nervous because I hadn't seen what you thought of this movie before, that you were going to be on for something you didn't like, but it feels like you like this movie.
I love this movie. I think this movie rocks.
Beautiful. Love this.
It's been weirdly divisive.
Muted, yeah.
And sort of muted response-wise.
Yes.
When Magic Mike usually whips the opening weekend crowd into a frenzy.
Our crowd was lively. Was your crowd lively?
It was not that crowded because we didn't go opening weekend, but the people who were with us were rowdy. So it was like few and far between, and we were laughing. We missed opening weekend because I got strep throat. So,
oh no,
I was bummed to miss. I think my friends who I was supposed to go with had this really rowdy full theater, and then they infamously saw Christopher Nolan as they were leaving.
Oh, so wait, your friends are the Skinamarink.
The Skinamarink. Yeah, they found out about the Skinamarink, which is like...
That's amazing.
It's so crazy across so many different levels. I do wish he was seeing Magic Mike, but it's also so cool that he was seeing Skinamarink.
It rules. I mean, that's like when I saw Christopher Nolan and we both walked into In the Heights and he sat a row in front of me.
Wow.
And I just kept watching him the entire time. I was like, I should be watching this movie, but I want to know what he thinks of this movie, you know?
Do you think he liked it?
He seemed to have a decent time. He was with the whole fam. I think his kids had more fun than he did.
My friend would always see him at one of the grocery stores in LA buying San Pellegrino with his kids.
Gotta have.
He always was like choice. Had like, you know, the big case under his arm of the San Pel.
I love that he's often seen out at the movies and with his kids.
I know, I do love it. Wearing his jacket. And did your friend say if he had his trademark like suit jacket and scarf on?
No scarf. I do think a jacket.
No scarf. Yeah. Okay. Gasp. Okay. Interesting.
Gasp.
I was stunned to hear no scarf.
I know, that's really shocking.
As cool as it is that Christopher Nolan was going to see indie horror Skinamarink, it would have been wild if he had been there to see Magic Mike.
He should have been there to see Magic Mike.
I mean, listen, to be fair, we don't know that he didn't see it. We just know
I'm sure he will be seeing it.
Yeah. Do you think him and Soderbergh are friends? I feel like probably,
totally,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. At least if not friends, they certainly have a mutual professional respect for each other.
Right. They're like, we both care about this as an art form, you know?
Yeah.
Soderbergh's probably like, you're one of the few keeping it alive.
Well, I believe I've mentioned it before on Mike, but the Soderbergh-Fincher friendship is one of my favorite celebrity friendships.
Yes.
Because I feel like they keep each other in check in a weird way. And I feel like no one could fit into that.
I think all these guys who really care about like the nitty-gritty technical stuff, like what they're shooting on and how they're shooting it, these guys who are not just like plug and chug with IP necessarily, I think like they all
plug and chug
get along with each other because they care about like format.
They care about capital C cinema,
which
is why there are close-up slow motion shots in this film of Channing Tatum gyrating.
Dear Lord.
Zoomed in on various parts of his body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's cinema with a capital C.
It is.
He's such a crazy looking man.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if we should bring this in to the pod, but I was talking with a friend, a former guest of the podcast, about we were talking about like sex appeal, and we were looking at Channing Tatum, and in this movie, I feel like Channing gives one of the best close-ups of like sexual charisma and energy. Like when he and Selma are like looking at each other from across the table, it's so erotic.
It's great.
Or not
it's
maybe
amazing.
Erotic, but like sexually charged. Yeah. You know, like, and it's like he just holds on the close-ups of the two of them for like a nice like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And it is, it's when you know you're like, okay, this is like a star and he's like famous for a reason, you know?
He can hold the lens.
He can. But he is also one of the weirdest looking people in a good way.
I just always think I'm gonna finally be like accustomed to what he's supposed to look like. I've seen him in movies for half my life, and every time I'm like, oh yeah, this is what he looks like.
Yeah.
He is entering, maybe, I feel like after this movie, his like shirt era, so I'll be curious to see.
Where he should like wear a shirt as opposed to not
like,
wearing a
shirt? No, that's literally what he said, is he's entering like his shirt era. Wow. So I'm curious if he'll like,
listen,
his body will change again, or like
working,
his features.
Working out to the level of physicality that he has in these movies is
crazy.
Not fucking fun. It sucks. And he's, you know, he's 42. He's plenty young, but like every year it gets harder and harder to be able to either get back to or maintain the standard of like not even like the determination and what are, like the stamina. Mm. It's just about like maintaining that amount of muscle and how it looks. Sucks. It's terrible.
Do you think he's better with long hair or short hair is the real question.
I like his short hair.
I like the short hair too.
In this.
I think short hair too. Yeah. I don't know if he's a person who can do hair. Not like, hey, just, but you know, like when it goes, like I'm thinking about like the eagle when it's sort of like windswept across, you know, like it doesn't really work for him.
Oh yeah. He's got hair in Hail Caesar too, doesn't he? And yes, I thought it was like a wig. And it's like, no, that's literally just what his hair looks like.
Because he does that like thing where he like brushes it back.
I don't mind him when he had like the kind of like spiked up hair era, like the 2021 22 Jump Street. That's fine, but I think he looks good with a close cropped slash like shaved head hairstyle.
Yeah,
and if you look good with that, you should embrace it because it's rare.
Yeah,
it's a gift.
I agree.
Yeah,
don't squander it.
No,
yeah.
No facial hair though. I feel like he's grown a mustache for like 3 movies and it like never works. I feel like he needs like a clean face.
Yeah, lest we forget, no one will ever be more of an expert on how Channing Tatum looks on screen than Jordan.
Cursed. I can't believe I've seen them all. I will say, I meant to do this up top. This was going to be my original opening, but I have come to atone for a sin.
Oh, yes, you
and
must.
Like in my original ranking of his films that were queer,
give
I did
backstory.
Not have
give
the Eagle as number one, but I would like to move the Eagle to the most queer films in his filmography.
Okay.
I mean,
so it's now done.
I think that is
no more changes.
The correct, correct.
Well,
because
I went in for this movie, I was like, all right, let's see where this is going to land. Not to spoil, but it's not very high.
No.
But
not to spoil. We realized when we were preparing for Chatting Channing round 2 special one-off spectacular one night only theater show that we should revisit. Well, I say we, that Jordan should revisit Channing Tatum films ranked by how queer they are. And we realized that we had referenced a very important list by one of our internet friends, Linda Codega, where they had put The Eagle at number one, and I think that's how we discovered that The Eagle was a movie in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it makes sense that it holds
it
that number
there,
one spot. Yeah. And XXL was 22 Jump Street
22
is number 2.
Pretty high. XXL is pretty high. I can just tell you, you guys vamp. I got this. Don't
just
worry.
Just give us the top three.
It's Eagle, 22, XXL, Foxcatcher. Side Effects are the 5.
Yeah. Okay.
Side Effects is kind of a cheat though, because
he's not.
I don't think I even knew about this movie, The Eagle. I think I thought this was, I think I was thinking
fake?
Eddie the Eagle, which I also think is queer in its own way, but a different way.
It is.
For sure. That's definitely queer.
We'll put it on the long list. No, okay. Listen.
No one has seen
no
The Eagle?
No one has ever seen or heard about the Eagle.
Yes.
Except for Linda Cardellini, who put together a very comprehensive list of Channing Tatum. It opened wide. We did a whole main feed episode on it. It is now one of my sister's favorite movies.
That's insane.
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I like it, but it still, to this day, is the lowest, like, lowest viewed film that we've ever covered, according to Letterboxd stats. You know how they let you, like, rank films
sort
by
how popularity
popular they are?
Yeah, so
the Eagle
is
dead fucking last.
Yep.
And will always be dead last.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Nothing will ever pass it.
Except for opening night of this movie.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Fran, what was your viewing experience? What did you think of this movie? Give us your Magic Mike backstory.
I saw the original Magic Mike when I was in college, living in my college town for the summer with no job, just skating by on savings during a full-on heat wave in Michigan. It was like 100 degrees.
Oh my
so
God.
We saw three movies in theaters that day because we didn't have AC. So that was one of the three that we saw. And it was definitely the best of the movies that we saw.
Do you remember the other two?
I know we definitely saw the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man. I can't remember the third one was, if we saw it. And then I went and saw Magic Mike again when I was like back with my parents later in the summer. And I recall being sort of put off by it. I think that's such a tonally strange, I mean, they're all so really weird, which is what's great.
They're all pretty weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it kind of takes seeing all of them to understand how weird they are. But the original Magic Mike is such an unpleasant movie for most of it. I hate that Cody Horn performance. I hate that Alex Pettifer performance, though I think
they're both horrible.
Yeah, though I think like Channing obviously shines, but it's like such a miserable endurance trip. And then I saw like XXL is like one of the greatest experiences of my life, but I saw like an 11 a.m. matinee of that on a weekday with a friend who was in town because I was off work and we were like, she was visiting Chicago and we were like, what should we do? And we were losing our minds watching that movie. So this was like a hotly anticipated threequel for me, for the most part, like outside of The Laundromat, which like I know one person who likes, and I think it is really just being like a contrarian.
It's quite bad.
That movie is like kind of unforgivable, but all the other recent Soderbergh stuff I've really just loved.
Mm.
And I really like his sort of this like wave that he's on right now. I'm really fond of, I don't think this movie is better than, but I love Let Them All Talk. I think that is like one of the modern masterpieces of our time. And it's such a shame that it like just went to HBO and no one's seen it, but
good fucking movie.
Because the man cranks out movies like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. He had like three movies in a row just go straight to HBO Max with like Much of a Whisper, and the only one I feel like that properly broke through was Kimmy. But then I also don't know if that's just our corner of the internet.
That's true.
But like No Sudden Move and Let Them All Talk both just got like completely swallowed up.
Yeah.
Even like High Flying Bird from Netflix.
Yeah.
Like every streaming movie that he's had, even though they're quite good, has
like post retirement streaming. Yeah.
It's just slid into like the depths. Never to be seen again.
Like, I also really liked Unsane, and I know that's kind of
that
a hot take.
that is a hot
but
take.
But I liked that movie, walking out of the theater, and everyone was like, that movie sucked. And I was like, not to be contrarian, but kind of good.
I'm scared to see Unsane. Everyone's like, that movie's gnarly. It's really unpleasant.
It is.
It's very unpleasant in a very different way than, because I also agree that Magic Mike is an unpleasant movie, even though I kind of like aspects of the unpleasantness. Unsane is just like a really harrowing watch.
Yes.
Because the whole time you're like,
it's just upsetting.
She's being stalked and harassed.
Gaslit.
And nobody believes her.
Yeah.
And this man wants to like fully like
kill
her, but also seduce her. It's just it's very dark.
Yeah.
For a movie that is also like a little bit campy.
I think
it's
like
weird.
It's the use of his, like, I think it's his best use of his iPhone though.
Mm.
Because it like the sort of like degradation of the frame itself and like how it sort of looks more pixelated and like because the camera lenses are like a little bit too wide, so faces look a little bit disproportional. Mm-hmm. I think it like plays into why you like feel uncomfortable watching it. But I feel like even for this movie, like I in this post in, or I guess like rather in his like quick making all these movies like really fast. Like, I feel like he's really weaponizing Wide so much more than he may have earlier in his career. Mm-hmm. Like, especially in this movie, I noticed like we are in wide shots like fucking 90% of the runtime, maybe. And then especially even on like the dance sequences, etc. So like then when we do cut into a close up, you really feel the impact of it. But like Magic Mike's Last Dance is such like a wide shot movie, even though we're inside. Like, it feels like we're shot on like 35s, 25s, you know, like the lenses are just wide open.
Yeah. It's nice. It feels like a return to cinematic filmmaking from Soderbergh in the way that this was like a return to theaters, because the internet successfully campaigned for this to get a theatrical release.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of insane that they were thinking not to give it a theatrical release when both Magic Mikes made so much fucking money.
Yeah.
Is this thing making any money? I sort of feel like this is...
No.
Here's the thing. It's not. And so I pulled up the Magic Mike franchise box office because it's really interesting. There have been extremely diminishing returns. Ugh. And it looks like it's poised to be almost perfectly like spaced out into thirds, where Magic Mike... opening weekend, 39 mil. Worldwide, made 170. Magic Mike XXL, opening weekend, 12 mil. Mm. Worldwide, made 123. This one, Last Dance, opening weekend, 8 mil. Mm. So, wow. Like...
The bros, 8 mil.
The bros disappeared. Like...
Yeah, I mean, it's a really weird movie. It was hard to tell if the people who were in the theater with us... liked it. I mean, I think we tried to, like, I saw it with my boyfriend. I think we tried to, like, play our cards right of seeing it, like, on a Friday night when we both were off yesterday. We were like, we could go see this at 2 p.m., but I think the move is to see it at, like, 7.
That's exactly what we did. We got some margaritas at Margaritaville before. Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville, excuse me.
Yes.
Proper title.
Universal
only.
City Walk.
Our crowd
integral
was pretty hyped for the first 15 minutes.
Yep.
This opening striptease sequence with...
They were going wild.
Channing Tatum and Salma Hayek. I was also going wild. Yes. It was amazing. And then by the time that he was, like, getting off the plane to London... dead silence.
Yeah, it kept going down. They
came back
for
the last,
not for the
25.
Whole end of the last thing, though. I feel like his last dance.
Yes.
The titular,
the duet,
Magic Mike's Last Dance. Yeah. I would say people got back into it, but it was pretty low.
The I don't think that this movie is super interesting, and I can't wait to unpack it, but it does have like a very weird structure for, like, I feel like a your standard audience.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
Nothing like sequency happens in the middle, like, two-thirds.
Yeah,
there's a chunk of like high energy shit at the beginning and then at the end, and then the middle, while interesting, like, just doesn't have a ton going on in the way that Magic Mike and XXL do.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's like really like a kind of fits into the like saving the theater, saving the town, like White
saving
Christmas,
filmmaking,
you know, like Breaking
the
Two, Electric Boogaloo, et cetera, et cetera, like sort of structure. But I guess like it isn't really super tight. But I mean, then again, you look at XXL, and XXL is so loose and like its structure and formatting. Yeah, it's like everybody wants them, which works, I think, to the benefit of that movie, because you have like these interspersed dance sequences and character beats, whereas this one's much more focused on like Mike and his relationship, you know.
Yes.
Question for the group: did we buy their chemistry together?
Yeah, I did.
Totally.
Especially the
opening.
Beginning
yeah.
was, I think, like electric.
Yeah.
But you...
No, I mean, there's just a lot of people online who said they don't, but I feel like they did. I just don't think it will last is my only thing.
Yeah, like, you think it's like a flash
in
the pan.
I don't think it ever lasts with Mike. That's sort of the thing of it, is he falls in love with like everyone he ever meets, and then it blows up in his face. I think it's like quite tragic and lovely.
I know. Like, I kind of... I guess like there isn't a world in which he does find like a happy ever after.
No, which is bad. Well, I think that he doesn't need a romantic... long-term romantic partner to have a happy ever after. I think that he likes this kind of falling in love and then letting them go and then falling in love again.
Getting some free trips to London.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah.
Exactly. He likes being reverse pretty woman.
Yeah.
Which is exactly
who among us would not want
the
that?
Premise of this film is.
I also think he's a little bit like, you know, leaving the door and a chair open for the angel Elijah. Like, he'll pop up, he'll help you, like, solve your thing, and then he's gonna, like, disappear into the night or whatever and go start a new company.
Yeah.
Which is why, I mean, I think it's interesting that this is definitively the end of Mike Lane, even though apparently there are other stories, quote unquote, planned for this universe. Whatever that
means. Back Big Dick Richie. I need to know what's happening with him.
We need a limited series spinoff about Big Dick Richie. Yeah. But that's why I think it's interesting that this is like, okay, and this, of course, as we've all been waiting for, is the conclusion of like the character Mike Lane and his arc. First of all, what arc? But in a good way. But again, it's like this. It feels like three stories in his life that were not the first or the last.
Yeah.
It was just a moment in time that Soderbergh was like, here you go. Here's the movies. Shut the door. Yeah. Move on with your lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, I think, I don't know. This is definitely a weird movie. You can feel that because it was originally intended to be for HBO Max. You can kind of feel the slimness of it, I feel like, in terms of budgeting, because it definitely feels smaller and you can kind of see where they cut corners.
Weirdly, the budget for this one is listed, I said listed, as the highest of the three.
Oh, psych.
Magic Mike original, which is so insane to me, was made for $7 million.
Oh my goodness,
that's crazy. What?
That's actually
bananas. And then XXL was made for 14.5, and this, the budget,
that feels crazy cheap.
I know. Yeah. The budget for this one is listed at $45 million.
What?
Which is,
I feel like that's got to be like a lot of that is actor fees. I think like he and Salma cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because like my thought was that it would be cheaper because none of the tertiary dancers ever speak a word. And so like, therefore, I was like, I bet you're getting some like SAG cutting around here for that. It is bananas that they don't say anything.
They don't even get like individual like title cards at the end. I would have loved to know what some of these guys' names were.
Who was who?
Individually. Yeah. Specifically the Italian one.
Who they make such a big deal out of. She's like, this Italian guy, he's the greatest dancer, look at this, and then nothing really comes of it. You're like, okay, he's just the dancer.
It feels so Soderberghy to me, because as much as I love and respect Soderbergh, listen, if we're going for the Soderbergh Fincher friendship, I'm like 99% Fincher, 1% Soderbergh. I like structure. Yes. I'm a big fan of structure in life and at the cinema. So yeah, but that felt that I wasn't surprised that hot Italian man just sort of like blended into the background after being this kind of like jumpstart of the dancers, because I was like, feels like a Steven move.
Yeah, I did like the girl they brought on though. Big fan of her.
Obsessed with her. Yes. Obsessed with both the girls, actually. The actress.
Yes.
Who they decided to keep in the show.
Big fan of her.
Big fan. And then also the ballerina.
Oh, of course. I mean, that is...
For the duet.
Yes.
Holy.
Cool girly.
Hell, she's so cool.
It's a real bisexual moment, I feel like, watching that dance. You know, you're like, which one am I supposed to be watching? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it worked. I would say, I would argue that is the queerest aspect.
I have a counterpoint.
Okay.
I think when Mike has rainbows burst out and he, Channing Tatum, voices a unicorn, I think that's maybe the most queer, because it's Channing being there. Like, I love unicorns. I am a unicorn.
Or whatever.
Sparkerella. It is Sparkerella core.
The butler feels loosely queer to me, and all of their little romantic moments as they like warm up to each other felt like a little side romance.
Yes. It feels very like Parent Trap butler adjacent energy, you know? I forget that guy's name, but he gives
the guy
kind
with
of
the
queer
handshake.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, listen, every butler who's like a buttoned up English guy is gonna
Be a little queer.
Just a little bit. I will say I thought that Max, Salma Hayek's character's family and everything that was going on there was the part of the movie that definitively did not work for me.
The voiceover?
The voiceover and the time that we spent integrating Mike into their family and kind of like all the little different relationships that were going on there. I was just...
Not into it? Not feeling it?
I could not get on board with it. Other than that, I basically liked everything. I was very mixed walking out of this initially. Jordan was like, that was so great. I was like, I don't know. And I've read a lot of good think pieces and I've thought about it. And like, it has
improved.
Improved fondly with me. Mm. I feel fond towards this movie. But yeah.
I think it's
that
like,
whole section
yeah.
Slash subplot was taking me out of it. I don't know if it was because like I never expected to see a family dynamic in the middle of this. That's interesting to put a family dynamic in the middle of like a strip show, because obviously a strip show is inherently sexual in some ways, but is not inherently like not, you know, you can, yeah. you can have healthy family relationships of and course, also yeah. do this kind of thing. Like, I love that it's about like older women feeling empowered and like sexy at every point in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, it was just like not clicking. I wanted it to.
No, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's like, I mean, I feel like all three have different conversations on stripping and like sort of how stripping like plays within like our culture and like the ways in which like why Mike does what he does for certain things, you know, like, cause I feel like the second one is so much about like joy and like
romance,
like feminism low key and like not low key, like high key, and like how it's all about like trying to make like people smile and like that sort of like empowerment through stripping. And this feels like the more like sexual elements of stripping, like especially like with him and Selma, that opening scene is so much about like stripping and dance being used on the other side of yes. it, you know what I mean?
Like it's meant to make people yeah. feel sexy. Like it's yeah. it actually I think is the first time that a strip scene actually leads to a sex scene.
Yes, no, it is.
Because usually there's a very hard line between like the right. fantasy versus the reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. that's why OG Magic Mike is sort of rocky and depressing, because it is kind of about like, I'm nothing to these women. Like, right. I'm just a fantasy.
Right.
Except for Cody Horn, who
like, delivers a great performance. Did you know she's married to Reed Carolyn?
Well, found that out. Fucking course.
Yeah.
Didn't they get, did they
but
meet?
But isn't she also someone's daughter?
She's a big, like, yes. executive.
She's an daughter. Nepo baby. Reed Carolyn met Mike being an assistant. Met Channing on Stop Loss. And, like, the two of them hit it off. And then they were like, I have an idea. Let's write something about Mr. Mike. But, like, all of it is, like, weird. This, like, weird, very film industry, like, smorgasbord. But.
Yeah. Cody Horn is the daughter of Cindy Horn, who is a model and actress, and Alan F. Horn, an entertainment executive and former chairman of Walt Disney Studios. So that is ostensibly how she got involved with Magic Mike originally. And then I assume that's where she and Reed Carolyn met. And now they're married, which is great. And I love that Reed Carolyn is still making a buck on Magic Mike. Like, he's written all three of them.
Yes. Yes. Is there any, like, other pre-production stuff about this? I feel like it's, like, kind of the least...
That's the thing, is there... This
exciting.
Is, yeah, it was exciting that they were making a third one.
Shocking, I would say.
And then everything kind of disappeared, and then they were like, it's coming out. HBO Max.
Yes.
Just kidding. It's now here in theaters, and that's about it. All the trailers were very kind of, like, vague.
Mm-hmm. Except that he was going to London.
Yes. Yeah. Except that it was inspired by
the show,
the live show.
Fran, mm-hmm. have you seen the live show?
No. Have either of you?
No. I mean,
Phil saw it in Vegas.
Really?
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
I mean, the funniest thing that I can take away from it that I thought about a lot while watching this is that, like, this was something said and then initially sort of redacted and edited, but he was like, Channing sort of functions as like the villain of the live show, or like the producer, that he's doing a lot of like voiceover stuff. All the greatest comparison I have is like Aerosmith narrating the roller coaster at Disney World.
That is the best where comparison. They're like,
where they're like, he's like, we have to get the show ready in time, and like these dancers might not be good enough, but we'll have to make do. And he's sort of like negging them, and then by the end he's like happy, but that he's sort of like maybe not a nuisance, but he's sort of down on them, and they have to prove themselves in his eyes, which I think is a very funny relationship to how he is in this movie, which is essentially the opposite. But
he's like the bro-y, but he's the voice for them.
They have that element of like omniscient narration, though, with his unicorn bit. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
I somehow had no idea that that was the case with the live show. I just thought it was a straight up strip show,
like, dance scene
that was Magic Mike branded.
Mm.
Like, I did not think that there was like that the
like a
character
narrative
of Mike Lane existed in relation to.
He does. Yeah, that's what was shocking to me too. Yeah. I was like, it's just guys with shaved heads dancing.
Yeah, like it's just Magic Mike inspired. Sure, but no, yeah. It's fully like universe building.
That's fucking interesting.
That's so
it's weird. It makes me want to. I would love to see it. I think for a long time I was like, okay, who cares? And now that I know that it is actually like tangential to the franchise.
Yeah.
And possibly canon. Franchise. I don't know.
I mean, I think it is. For sure. It is canon.
I feel like it's canon now, at least. Like, this movie feels like the building of the stage show. Like, I feel like you watch this movie and then you go see the stage show is sort of at least what it's sort of setting up.
I think that it is trying. It's weird in that this movie is partially an advertisement for the live show.
For sure.
I was expecting it to go a little more meta with how much time is spent. Like, in Magic Mike's Last Dance, I think it's fair to say that 80% of the runtime is spent planning this live show.
Yeah.
Maybe 70%.
Yen is like concerned about like the bureaucracy of it.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
And I thought it was going to end with some sort of like, this is Magic Mike Live. Mm. Like, we've discovered a whole new
Dolly outside. We're at the theater.
Maybe not that fucking cheesy, but yeah, something like
Channing walks into the opening of Magic Mike Live. Yes.
It's a 4DX.
There's Steven Soderbergh.
Steven Soderbergh turns off the camera, comes out. It's like, good job, buddy.
Steven Soderbergh.
Has like a, you guys see Souvenir Part 2?
Yes.
I'm imagining like a Souvenir Part 2 style ending.
Yeah.
At the end where we see Steven.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that you are in cinematic land. What?
In the Souvenir, is Richard Iotti, right? Like he is, what if he comes in for this universe? He's like critiquing the Magic Mike dance. You know, he's kind of like
the pretentious.
It'd
be so good. I mean, it's crazy. I watch like a lot of British TV and panel shows and niche films from that world. And it's crazy how many of the character actors they got for this are just like people even I don't know. And I watch a lot of this shit.
I was going to ask. That was going to be my next question was like, who are these people?
There are some dancers from the actual show. I know that for sure.
Yes.
But the rest?
Okay.
That's it. Idea. And like most of, first of all, of course, you need to hire like really, really good dancers for this specific show. It makes sense that we're not going to know them. And this is not me quibbling about like the celebrity quota of this movie. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'm content for them to be dancers, but I think a lot about how like in XXL, they're sort of constantly arguing like, we're not strippers, we're male entertainers. There's this like weird like, it's not sex work, but it is sex work thing. And then in this film, they're like, stripping is sex work. But they're also just hiring like straight up professional dancers or like street dancers. They're also still like evading this idea of being a stripper or that being a stripper is like more than being a stripper. It's whatever other term you want to use. But they're really like weird about the term stripping.
Yes. In it. I think that they never say the word. It's always just dance. Mm. And the only time that it's even alluded to is on their deeply glitchy Zoom call. Glitchier than our current
Zoom call. I love the glitchy Zoom call. It's so good.
It was so good to see them. I feel like Matt Bomer really dominated that Zoom call. I was not expecting him to be the one walking away with the most lines. But
he's so funny in these. He really makes me laugh.
He's such a cutie. I love him.
Yeah.
Ken.
But that's the only time where Mike's like, yeah, I'm in London. And they're like, oh, hey, like, good on you, man. Right. Sex work is work. And that's basically it.
Yeah.
When he is actually like not even doing remotely there
no.
for that.
Yeah.
I was conflicted on the glitchy Zoom call as well. I don't know. I don't want to be a hater. I feel bad.
I love this. No, it's okay.
I don't want to be a hater.
Do you think he should have gone to
artistry.
Somewhere else? Or do you like, I feel like,
I like London. London's cool.
Interesting. Okay.
It's very, I thought there was going to be a little bit more of like, London is very reserved.
Yes.
And
like, we only get that really with the bored person.
And that's more just, you know, they fucking broke stage regulations. What are you going to do? It's not about like, how dare you put on the strip show. There's no blowback to the idea of like, we should put on a strip show in terms of like the content.
Mm.
I mean, in general, something I've always really admired about these movies outside of the first one is just like they're so conflict averse.
Yeah.
And so villain averse. Like even the ex-husband character, like we don't really like him, but he's never like, you're a stripper and you'll never be anything else. It's like not even that pointed with him, nor is it passive aggressive. And even like Salma Hayek's characters, like fake friends, are like largely fine.
Harmless.
Yeah.
A little annoying, but harmless.
Yeah.
So she doesn't like them, whatever. Like it's very possible to like someone who's like not completely offensive to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was very obsessed with Salma Hayek's like character in general in this. She is
unhinged in a good way,
insufferable in the best way.
Yeah,
like it is just crazy.
It's such a specific kind of annoying.
Yeah. Yes, and we all know someone like that, but I really appreciated like how much tenacity and just like nonstop energy she was bringing to the role in that like particular unhinged way. Mm-hmm. Like every scene you'd be like, girl, like, oh my God, like you really want God, this.
Take your hat off. Chill out.
Big hats constantly.
So funny.
She needed the extra hat for like the size difference between her and Channing, because Channing is like 6'3" and she is like 5'2".
I wonder if it had something to do with that, honestly. Yeah, that actually feels like a great way to like fill a frame, is to just have her in a big hat.
Really?
Better than apple boxes.
I know. It was, I think I noticed it the most, like when he lifts up her leg during that first dance, and her leg goes like maybe not even up to his collarbone. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, you are so small.
When he lifts her against the window and you actually understand that she's like a third of the size of him.
Yes.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Has
Chan, I don't know if he's ever been with someone in a movie who is equal height to him, because like
he's a tall guy.
Step Up, Jenna. Of course, Jenna, his original first wife, is very tiny.
Yeah.
Zoe Kravitz is very tiny. Mm-hmm. Sandra Bullock's kind of tiny.
I feel like Amber Heard might be tall, honestly.
Yeah.
That actually feels right.
That's a good call. Cody Horn.
She's 5'7". That's like woman tall.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Especially actress tall. I feel there are more tall actresses now.
Yeah.
But there wasn't.
No. Like, get him with DeBicki, though. That would be fascinating.
That would be crazy.
Like, those two body types dancing with each other would just be mind blowing. Mm-hmm.
This movie could have used a DeBicki, I feel.
Yes.
I would agree. I wouldn't have said no to
a dabble of DeBicki.
Just a little dabble of DeBicki. It's a difficult movie to talk about with any sort of structure.
Yes.
Obviously. But there's kind of like, it's just vibes. It is vibes in the same way that XXL is vibes.
Yeah.
Magic Mike has like a legitimate plot.
For sure. Magic Mike's like the most tightly plotted.
Yeah. XXL and this. No plot, just vibes. And what was interesting is this was a no plot, just vibes movie, but the vibes were not.
It was different. Vibe-y. It's a different sort of structure. Yeah.
They were like stressful vibes.
They were stressful vibes.
You comped it to Ocean's 12, which I think is like a valid
comp. I really agree with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't think I'm the first to say it by
but
any
But you can
means.
Say it the loudest.
No, that's okay. Yeah. You know? I can't compete with the sauce. If I could just bottle an ounce of Salma Hayek's intense energy, maybe. But yeah, it's kind of, it's weird. It's a little meta, but not too meta. People are conflicted about it, but it's a very interesting, like, craft movie. Yeah, and I feel like Soderbergh makes so many that he just kind of does what he wants.
It's like the making of a movie, too. Like, this one, I mean, like, they always say, like, a movie is about, you know, the making of a movie.
This is, like,
and this
great
is the most, like,
movie
this
about
is how we make
a
movie. But I feel like the franchise at large also sort of has that energy in, you know, in terms of, like, how you're, like, getting the gang together. You want to put on a show. The show is the movie itself, et cetera. But this is the most where you can make it, well, one-to-one of, we're actually making a film. We're flying here because of financiers. You have to do X, Y, and Z to like meet the studio.
You don't really want to do it, but you understand that it's necessary for X, Y, Z to be able to do other things that you want to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious.
You're trying to get in touch with your creative side.
Do you think, because like Soderbergh talked about like how he was inspired by it, but like, do you think like he necessarily, like, I'm just curious, like, if he was the one really pushing this movie forward the most out of like the three, like him, Carolyn, and Channing?
I would imagine. Yes, because he didn't direct XXL, famously. No. And so it's like he's back in the director's chair.
Mm-hmm.
He wants it. I think that he seems like the one that would push for it to go back to theaters.
For sure, yeah.
So yeah, but I mean, it's a guessing game. Maybe Reed Carolyn's like, listen, the XXL money, it's slowed to a trickle. We got to do this again.
Dog was not providing enough.
I sort of feel like this is a Reed Carolyn thing. I feel like Soderbergh was probably like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
He has such like chilled out vibes despite working faster than anyone in Hollywood. I think he's just sort of like, if you give me a script, I'll do this, but like you have to do that.
Yeah. No, definitely. I'm curious to see what he does next, like if he keeps going with these like smaller things or if it'll be like another phase, like if he'll have another retirement and then enter like another era of Soderbergh, because it feels like mm-hmm. you really can go through his career and kind of like carve it up into sections. It's like that first you like burst onto the scene, indie small, you have like your Oceans era, your like first retirement, and then you have like current era, right?
I mean, he's never gonna retire.
No, like, man's a fucking madman.
And he can do whatever. Like, he has the ability to take his iPhone, call five actors who really respect him and are A-list talent and get a film put together.
Yeah.
And shot and edited within like under a year. Yes. If he wants to. That's mm-hmm. insane. That is crazy freedom. He is apparently developing a HBO Max miniseries called Full Circle that's like kidnapping New York, which
sure
sounds interesting. I really like the girlfriend experience.
Have not seen
season one.
People love that show.
Season. Yeah. Season one is interesting. I think that, though, for the record, Magic Mike is a much better exploration of like sex work and like work adjacent to sex work than the girlfriend experiences. That show is I would say questionable at best about how it feels about Riley Keough's character and everything surrounding sex work. It's really interesting though because she's like crazy in that show.
I mean, I feel like she often plays very chill characters within her movies, you know.
In the girlfriend experience, I personally think that like she's playing a sociopath, or it seems designed that she's like playing a sociopath.
I have no idea what the show is about. It's so I'm just nodding.
Have you seen season one?
No.
Okay,
I'm very curious about it though.
It's an anthology series, and every season is very different in terms of like what it tackles. Like it's like true anthology. It's just kind of like the same overarching concept. But yeah, season one is very kind of like straightforward New York. High-powered, like, law firm business, and Riley Keough plays a high-class escort who offers the girlfriend experience.
There it is.
But it's definitely like, oh, the people in this world are bad, and, like, they're drug addicts, and, like, ooh, like, be careful. Like, you might get fucked up and screwed over by the people.
Sure.
It's crazy. Okay. And then on top of that, like, they fully have her playing a sociopath. So I think that it's interesting to see, the point of this tangent was that I think it's interesting to see Soderbergh tackle similar topics over and over as his style and his like point of view evolves.
For sure.
And that's why I think that he'll never truly retire. Cause like I am completely on board with Let Them All Talk and our opinion of it. Like I want to see him maybe do another version of that.
Yeah. Bring Lucas Hedges back
in like 10 years
out of his retirement.
Like I'd like to see him return to the well and just tackle things at a slightly different angle.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Did either of you watch Mosaic?
No.
I watched two episodes of Mosaic. It really was not for me at the time it was coming out, but I would love to like come back to it. There was like, it's not uninteresting, you know? There's stuff going on. I love the idea that Mosaic poses, which is that Sharon Stone and Paul Rubens, not as Pee-wee, are best friends.
It's unhinged.
Like, he's got something there. So,
that
I don't know.
Bananas.
This new HBO thing sounds like it could be Mosaic-y. I don't know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's meant to be.
Like Mosaic, no sudden move kind of adjacent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. With just a little bit of that, like, sprawling, like, interconnected stories, but not really interconnected, maybe a little side effects-y. And then he's also developing some sort of miniseries about the life of an Ottoman physician. Okay, that's fun. Interesting. I don't really know. I can't get a read on the guy, but I'm happy every time a new project is announced.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Kimmy, I think, is so fucking good.
Kimmy fucking rocks.
It's so
Kimmy
good.
Has, like, one
it's
of the best needle drops of last year, 2 years ago, whenever that came out. My brain is
it's just last year.
Okay, thank God. But the Beastie Boys needle drop is fucking incredible in that movie.
Yeah.
Hey. The nail gun. Let's go.
You want to talk about needle drops?
This movie?
This movie.
A lack thereof of pony?
Could have more. At least, okay, so yeah. I saw, when we were going into Magic Mike's Last Dance on, I believe, Friday night?
Yes, a Friday Eve.
Friday Eve, the social reactions had already dropped. And I saw a lot of people being like, they don't even do pony properly. Yes, they do. They play
it. Yeah, they do.
There's a dance. It's fine. Everybody calm down. But
I think because
it does not have the electric
version,
maybe, that we were expecting.
For sure, yeah. I guess there isn't, like, what's the big song maybe from this? Like, is there, like, a big takeaway one?
That's the thing, is that the soundtrack for this is so different than both the Magic Mike and the XXL soundtrack, which is are, like, so pop forward, which you know is my shit.
Oh, me too. I really found myself wishing for more songs that I knew. And then the Usher needle drop, I think, is, like, briefly exciting, and then it is very quickly, like, sort of stifled by the scene that is taking place while it's in the background. And then it just made me think of Hustlers, which is, like, a movie I have qualms with, but, like, it really nails using that song.
That needle drop in Hustlers is really fucking incredible.
Hustlers has my favorite music of, I think, the past 5 years.
I mean, like, it's really great.
Yeah. It's every single needle drop is incredible.
I guess I was hoping on the bus scene with Edna when they do that dance that it would be like the sort of transcendent Big Dick Richie Backstreet Boys sequence. And I think it was just like the bus scene was just cut a little too short, but it was kind of within the context of a montage. So I understand why it was sort of breezy and how they shot it. But like, I did want it to be a little bit longer or hit harder.
Yeah, I wanted it to be a sequence, like a dance sequence.
But I did like Edna.
I mean, a G.
A queen.
A legend.
Yeah.
And by the way, we stand proper, you know, stage safety.
Of course. Look, we have to be. Yeah. The Radigan must be safe.
This is a pro-bureaucracy podcast.
Pro-bureaucracy when it comes to local theater.
For the Radigan. Keep the Radigan alive.
These dancers should have unionized so that we knew one of their names.
I know. Put some respect on their names. The thing is that it's like, while I did miss the OG boys, glitchy Zoom call notwithstanding, I was very excited to maybe get to know new boys, because I think that, like, something that the first two movies had that this movie noticeably, like, is steering away from is the sense of, like, the community, whether it's in stripping as, like, a form of dance slash competition or as kind of, like, a lifestyle.
Sure.
And I think by setting it in this very professional world, it removes that community. But also, if you've ever spent time around theater kids, you know that, like, they're all thick as thieves and there's a shit ton of drama. And it felt like I was missing Mike's connection that he usually has to the people that he's, like, teaching about the power of this type of dance. It was just very choreography forward, without a lot of relationships in that setting. Instead, it's just, like, very Channing Salma fronted, which is fine. But I think that felt like a element of Magic Mike that I assumed would be essential to a movie that was not here.
Now, on the queerness, because this is the podcast, and that's the end of it.
Here.
There it is.
I think that that's actually a good segue.
Sure, yeah. No, it is. I mean, because I weirdly wasn't expecting this one to be as queer at all. Like, I kind of just, like, had the feeling, just because it felt so front-loaded on their relationship, it just kind of felt going in that it wasn't going to have
maybe
the texture that the other two maybe necessarily had. And, like, I mean, I think you have a lot, obviously, like, in the first one, the Alex Pettifer Mike relationship slash Dallas bringing it in kind of has this, like, homoerotic sort of, will, do I want to be you, do I want to be with you undertone to it. Obviously, two is just so unabashedly, like, bi in terms of, like, which way are anybody, you know, everyone's swing each way.
Positive and very, like, found family.
Exactly, yeah. But this one just did not really necessarily have those themes, which is understandable because it's not really what the movie's going for. But it just really has not a lot.
Fine for the movie, not amazing for us, but that's okay. I I really do think like the sequences that were transcendent to me were the opening sequence, mm-hmm. The opening dance sequence, and the duet, yes. that met the titular, as we mentioned,
his last dance
between Mike and a ballerina who they bring in the rain.
Water dancing rules.
Stage.
Amazing. Sliding around.
It's a ballet. There is also stripping from both sides. Because that, in the opening sequence too, it's like that it leads into sex.
Right.
Cool. I love that. I loved that.
When he's hanging on the bars, like a jungle gym. It's amazing.
How he loves a well-made piece of furniture.
When he shakes
just testing.
He's like, I could use these.
So funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the juice that I wanted. But I do think that like there's an element of sexuality and sort of freedom to those two sequences that I really like. As we mentioned, definitely like big bi panic energy
for sure
towards the end there.
Yeah.
It is really
fascinating that they've never
like
brought
singing
a guy on stage. And I understand that it's like so much about like female joy, but and like I'm curious women. That it never ever swung into that direction, at least like for like one dance, you know what I mean?
I'm not shocked at all.
I don't know if that would have ever been a thing. Do you know what I mean? But like, I guess it is. I don't know.
I guess like, I'm not shocked, but even like them, like not really letting Matt Bomer play gay.
I
understand that in the first one, he's got the wife, but like how easy would it have been in XXL to be like, my wife and I divorced and I'm exploring my sexuality. Like, I don't think the movie would have lost anything by having that.
No.
I thought a lot about, this great TikTok I came across in sort of one of my late night scrolls of some girl seeing Newsies on Broadway being like, have you seen this? I'm setting my Hinge or my Tinder thing to just be like the theater where Newsies is taste. And then it's been like duetted with a bunch of the Newsies guys backstage being like, who's going to tell her?
And then a Grindr notification like goes off in the background.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
And it really did like make me think watching this. I'm like, well, how many of these like amazing international European dancers that they get like might actually be gay? And like, what would it mean to have men come up on stage with them? I don't know. It is such a weird part of this movie, this franchise. And it's ever developing definition of like feminism.
And this movie really tries to front load, I feel like, the feminism.
Which is slightly confusing to me because XXL, I think, succeeds at that so
casually.
Completely.
Yeah.
And like the whole Andy McDowell scene
oh my God.
Is incredible. Mm-hmm. But also XXL has the drag bar sequence, which is transcendent.
Yes.
And it does feel like they took a big step backwards in terms of like, to Fran's point, is this like partially the reason why none of these guys have characters or personalities or like speak at all? Because that feels like something that you would have to go into is that they don't all want to make like women in the audience horny. And that by putting this into a performance style show where like yes they bring people up on stage, but it's not at a strip club. That's the whole point. Like
it's
an artistic expression. It's like has a narrative to it. Mm-hmm. Like
it's like when I don't know if you've seen Moulin Rouge the stage show, which I have a lot of qualms with, but in that they have like people kind of like roaming and like dancing like in the crowd with everybody. Like
it's very
guys,
communal.
Gals, like everyone's kind of dancing, which gives it like this sort of like fluid sexuality, which I feel like you don't necessarily get within this, which I think you could see.
Yeah. There's two minds, I think, to kind of like how the theater and like the theater going experience is portrayed on screen, which is like Broadway, like haven for queer people and again like community, found family, and then there's like going to the theater is something for stuffy people with lots of money. Like there's these two very separate avenues of like the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels like it goes the second route, obviously, where it's like, well, everyone will be shocked and then delighted by the strip show, but everyone is kind of just like immediately on board like from the beginning. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's great. That's very much a non-issue, which makes me wonder, like, why did we not go into that?
The queer dynamics?
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, like, in Florida, I get it. If we're talking like the first two, how many of those dancers might have voted for Trump? How safe would they have been to be queer? But I think then, Fran, to your point, this is like set in Europe. You're bringing like an Italian, or maybe there's a French person. You know, I feel like it's like...
So what you're saying, Jordan...
I think it's a more safe space in England, perhaps, than in Tampa, Florida.
Europe has never heard of homophobia.
Correct, absolutely.
They have great politics mm-hmm. over there that are definitely 100%.
No, not dangerous at all. Yeah. No. But I think the only reason I said this, because I think the international appeal of it, rather, is like bringing in all of these dancers from all of these backgrounds, you would have a more diverse spread of sexuality, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, not to be a buzzkill, but I think it's the four quadrant thing. Like, I think that I probably mentioned this when we talked about Magic Mike and XXL last time, but like these movies were designed to get women in the theater, and you don't want the implication of queer men yucking your yum.
Right. Then they were shocked when a bunch of gay men went to these movies. Yes. Which is
and we're
bananas.
Like, oh, wait, that's crazy. But like have still hammered down on the fact that these are movies about like feminism.
Yeah.
Which is great. I'm obsessed with the fact that they're about feminism. But it does feel like they're not interested in necessarily expanding the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that, like, XXL drives home so much that, like, attending a strip show is, like, about an emotional experience regardless of the artistry. And this is, like, very artistry forward and kind of suggests that, like, the natural endpoint to gig economy work is pursuing it as, like, its most legitimized form. Whereas, like, the guys in two have their, like, very bizarre mini-capitalist small business desires that are offset, you know, by stripping that supports it. It doesn't have to be, like, a means to an artistic end. And I guess that, like, you know, Mike Lane is, like, their version of a prodigy. Like, he should be beyond this. But, like, what if he's maybe just the greatest stripper of all time and not, like, the greatest dance director? I don't know.
Right. Like, does he have vision? And a lot of what... like Mike and Max argue about is like the vision and the direction of the show and like what it's going to say.
Right.
And it I love it because it is like this collaboration between them that is weird and doesn't really make sense, but in a good way. And obviously like it brings them together. They kiss as like the curtain goes down metaphorically. Like it I think that works, but it whereas the first two movies, I think, are really realistic about what this world and this life can look like, both the good and the bad. This is like, what if someone super rich came and saw your talent and swept you away to live a life of luxury? And then the movie was over.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, the movie does, I think, pretty convincingly make the case like, yeah, that would be kind of sick. Like, that'd be fun. I would like to do that.
It would
love
be amazing.
That to happen to me. I volunteer as tribute.
It's a wish fulfillment movie.
Yeah.
And it's cool that like a slightly older, rich, independent woman is the one who is fulfilling the wishes. And that like Mike is essentially the ingenue, the Julia Roberts of this situation.
I really
I think
that
it's very
he's
cool.
Dating upwards too, like it's
between
really
this and
cool.
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah. No, I think like even just in this, like I think it adds like a nice flair to the movie because like in the previous two, he's either like same age or younger.
Yeah,
and I think it does add like a nice fascinating wrinkle to his character.
Also, like the majority of like the audience for these movies in real life were like slightly older
women. Sure.
Like not, you know, 30 plus, 40 plus.
I think women of a certain age are like way hornier for Channing Tatum than like
yes
Zoomers, but maybe I'm speculating. I don't think they really care about him.
No, I think you're right. Correct. The Zoomers do not care about Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum was like the mom Facebook groups.
Yes.
You know, like that is who loves him. So I love that like his actual love interest in this movie is someone who's clearly meant to like be a representative of that group. And that it is like about how she's fucking horny and wants to repressed, fuck and good for her. And they have awesome sex.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
It's like, it's interesting you mentioned, like, I didn't even think about like the Zoomer millennial divide on Channing Tatum.
The Zoomers
but like,
do not care, I guess it is
interesting looking at this movie in like a post 2016 world. Cause like those first two were made kind of like pre-Trump and like, like, especially like with who was seeing what movie. And I guess this movie is sort of a reflection of like, after all of that, like looking back, like what has changed about like the cinema going experience, who is seeing what is like the star, because this does feel like more of an adult movie for like us and like people of our age, if not older,
as opposed to a giant crowd pleaser.
Exactly. Yeah. It definitely feels like a more intentional quote unquote four quadrant versus like a more broad appeal.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like this is designed to, it doesn't give the same sort of like wide swatches of America like need to go see this movie.
Right.
Like I think with the transplant to London setting wise and how just like insular this movie is about the creation of the stage show. Like it's just, it's a very, very different audience that it's going to bring in.
Yeah.
I also think it's like a super interesting post-COVID movie.
They do because COVID.
I thought about that a lot. Yeah. This is just something I'm like incapable of like not being able to see now is just the ways in which COVID has impacted shoots. And I think a lot about when I'm watching movies, especially like new releases that go to the theaters, how much they still reflect like COVID protocol. These are like small casts in minimal locations. It's why something like, you know, I have like my qualms with Babylon in that my qualm is that I think it's a bad movie, but it's still crazy to see how many people are in that movie. Whereas this, I can like feel like I see the strings being pulled of like, we have a limited number of days. We're doing this quick. We have like five locations. Let's go do it. And I think some films have been really cool to watch in this regard, because I'm like, oh, interesting use of like minimal setting, minimal time. And then others where I've been like, I can tell that you either are fighting against these standards and want to be doing more, or you can't figure out how to make more with less. I think, I mean, in general, I think Soderbergh is like, you can throw him any kind of parameters and he can make it sing, but this totally feels like a COVID movie to me, even as far as like taking it out of the States.
Yes. For sure. Yeah. And that like it does have this sense of international appeal, but like you said, is very limited in scope. Although
for
we said
we're pretty much trapped inside the theater or Max's house, kind of like for the majority of the runtime.
Yeah. He's using great wide shots and like big wide lenses, but it feels like that. And it is very much this kind of like, we need to rebuild art for the masses in some way, shape, or
form.
That's
a fun take.
Yeah, like we need to get people
back
together again. But then weirdly, sort of the end result of this movie is not about the people. It's mostly just about Mike and Max.
Sure. But I do like the take that it's like post COVID, like how do you bring people like in a group to a theater to like have that experience again?
To have this sexy communal, like very touchy feely experience.
I think it's interesting like how it deals with COVID. Like, and I feel like thinking about COVID when movies reference it and how they reference it and how that affects the plot, like this like leads with COVID. It's like COVID fronted. Mike is out of a job. He's a bartender now because of COVID. And there were other movies last year that would like have a line or two. There was Sick that came out this year, which was super specifically about COVID, which I thought the movie was good, but it was harder to watch it because of all the protocols. But like this, I didn't have that trauma effect.
Well,
or
like,
you know what I mean? Like,
it's
cause you like
in and out,
right? You know, it's there and like, you're just moving forward. We don't have to like deal with actually the machinations of it.
I could not be happier that we're finally done with like the movies that were shot over Zoom and right. like whatever that horrible like Anne Hathaway robbery
movie I saw.
What is it called?
Wow.
It is
There and Gone. Like I'm so done with those. I never want to think about them ever again. But I do think that my favorite movie that actually uses the pandemic is Kimmy, because yeah. that's like the pandemic made everything worse. It was not fun, and it had locked down. Excuse God. Me.
Sorry. Had to find that.
No good. I like Kimmy is my favorite. I think use piece of media yeah. that I've seen use that.
There's a really crazy Romanian movie called Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn that like did the festival circuit last year.
Yeah.
Heard
that's a
that, one, yeah.
that movie is like a lot to stomach. A lot of that movie is just straight up footage of porn, but it is a great COVID movie. And a lot of that movie is about how annoying it is to deal with like an interpersonal like social sexual disaster, but also be like arguing with people with like masks on.
That's pretty funny.
Because she's like a teacher basically whose like sex yeah. tape gets leaked, and so they have this big school board meeting in a third act, and it's all outside and they're all in masks, and it's all the like parents like taking their masks off or keeping the masks on, and then they're like, we don't know what you're saying because you have the mask on. And it adds just this really like funny physical element to an otherwise stressful film that I really yeah. kind of appreciate in a movie I otherwise don't particularly like. But it was like the first time I saw anyone actually reckoning with like how annoying it was also to just like be a person with all this stuff going on,
and yeah. not in like an annoying way where it's like, oh my god, I'm stuck in my house, blah, but like actually like the socialness of it. Yeah, yeah.
I think interesting. the society and kind of like external reflection of the pandemic is much more interesting than, like you said, the kind of idea of
yes.
being stuck inside and what that does to you.
Yeah.
None of us want to think about that. It's too fresh. It's too painful. And I do think there's like a really great escapist element to Magic Mike's Last Dance between, again, literally getting
whisked away to London.
And given like all your heart's desires, both financially and creatively.
Yeah.
And also like the inner fantasy of the strip show, of the right. idea that like that's what this is, like they literally are transported on stage via a rainbow magical unicorn to like, you know, female desire yeah. and yeah. freedom in this sort of like, I love how they, you know, they use the framework of the original play to be like, women
and
were repressed
into this yeah
in the 1800s, they're repressed now, it's just a little different.
Yeah,
this, you really have to like free yourself.
Yeah.
And you can do that through the power of, like I said, lots of close-ups dance. Of abs.
Good abs.
And biceps.
Yes. I'm curious to see how this does long-term and, like, where people, like, if they come back to reevaluate it. Because I feel like with Let Them All Talk, it was sort of, like, dropped. Or people liked it. But then people come back to it. Like, I think, like, this movie might age better than, like, maybe, like, necessarily how people felt when it came out. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Really enjoyed seeing people, including yourself, Ran, like, talk about it at length, like analyze it, whether it's on Letterboxd or whether it's through like formal reviews, because I do think like there's a lot that you can take away from this movie. It does not feel shallow by like any means.
No.
Yeah, so I think that has been very cool. Everyone is coming away from this movie with something different, whether it's like, this is so deeply romantic, or again, like this is like wish fulfillment, like we've never seen it before, this is about bringing together a sense of community, or however you want to like take that post-COVID style. I think I like it more as a movie than I do as a Magic Mike movie, if that makes sense. I think that,
sure, yeah,
I struggle with its place in the franchise, but to be fair, I also struggle with Ocean's 12, which is very similar franchise wise but I love like so much of what is individually in this movie. I just feel like when you stack it against the other two,
sure, it's like a little harder.
Yeah, not that it's that, lesser yeah. at all. Fran, if you had to rank, could you rank?
Yeah, I think 2, 3, 1.
Yeah.
If I had to, I was also gonna say like, sure, this tracks for me. I think also because Ocean's 13 is the one that I really struggle with. I have my issues with 12, but I'd always much rather watch 12 than 13.
Interesting.
Yeah. What's your... See,
my mic?
Yes, but also, are you 12 or a 13 person?
I have to rewatch. I just,
yeah, it's been a minute.
It's been a minute since I've seen both of those. I rewatched 11 religiously, but not 12 and 13, which I don't know if that says anything. But I just think 11 is sort of like one of the like best plotted and executed movies. Like Elliot Gould in that movie is just everyone. I mean, everyone. But I just often think about Elliot Gould in that movie and smile, you know? But I don't know. Maybe I have to rewatch 12 and 13. I don't think I'm I'm in the space to do that.
How would you rank the Magic Mikes? That's
two with a bullet, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I don't know about one and three. One is a downer.
Yeah.
I'll throw them like equal, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's so hard because two for me is so high above. Like I view that kind of like it's just such a masterpiece. And like these two I both like, but I don't know if I necessarily love, you know?
Yeah.
I have sort of like qualms with both, but it's so hard when you view one of them as like kind of like a bona fide perfect thing. You know?
I think three is unquestionably a better made movie than one.
The coloring is also so much better.
Oh, that
like the coloring
horrible,
of one is
horrible
really
Miami
rough.
Filter.
Yeah.
And
really tough.
I'd much rather watch Salma Hayek and her butler and her cute daughter than I would Cody Horn and Alex Pettifer.
Yeah.
No disrespect, but like honestly, a little bit
a
of
little
disrespect.
Some.
I'm gonna be completely real. Yeah. So I think that like this is a much more enjoyable viewing experience, and it's like it's sentimental. It's very sweet. It is very erotic, and I think we called it out at the very beginning. But like the Last Dance has insane cross cutting between like Mike and Max's love story, which I, depending on how it's used in films, I'm sometimes like, I remember this scene. I saw it 45 minutes ago. Like it.
Sure. I was thinking that.
Yeah.
Too. That's like one of my big cardinal sins. Is I'm like, please God, don't show me something I already saw in the movie. But then I remembered like, Soderbergh is constantly doing this. This is like a huge part
Does
of Ocean's Eleven. So if any one guy can get away with it, it is him.
And so much of Ocean's is like, you remember that? We're doing it again.
Yeah, here it is. I think that he makes a very important distinction in like the cross-cutting here, and that like he doesn't just kind of take the same shots. It's the same scenes, but he's very intentional with like how he like focuses on what parts of the scenes he's pulling out. And I think like that scene where they're across from each other at the restaurant and it's like very close, like staring down the lens on both Max and Mike, like that actually like gave me like butterflies in my stomach when I saw it.
And like
Channing Tatum does like
up.
His jaw
like
pop
the, like, muscle
thing that he can do.
Yeah.
Like it worked. I thought it was really, really effective.
No, I
way
do too.
More than I would have expected.
And the rain dance is stunning.
Oh my God, it's amazing. And like I love that there is a stripping element to it because I didn't know that there would be. And it's like this very cool, like mutual stripping, which we've never seen before. I thought that was like a really cool, like elevation of the art form because
right.
I love the idea of this as an art form.
Yeah.
It's not like him doing just like the dance on a person.
It's them together.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's like so crazy to me that no one that we know of broke an ankle doing that. That's like all I could think is how much like ankle stability you have to have to dance on that water.
I can't imagine.
Your Achilles have to be like fucking thick.
There was that one behind the scenes photo that Channing Tatum posted of him like doing his little singing in the rain bit when he like swings around the pole in his knee pads, and I like that they give him knee pads like
me too.
Yeah, and I was like yes, like very necessary.
Yes.
Doing that
without would be unbelievable.
Yeah. And again, it's like, you know, he is not getting any younger.
Right.
Like, it's been, let's see.
First one was 2012.
2012. So, like, it's been 10. He's 10 years kind of, like, further along, both in universe and in real life. And I like that there is kind of, like, this adjustment. Even with him doing so much choreo in this movie.
Yeah.
Guiding as opposed to, like, being the main guy who we're seeing. Yeah. Even though he is the greatest stripper in the world.
Are there any other moments, Fran, or takeaways that you had that like stood out on this viewing and your reflection upon Mike in his last dance?
His long life.
I mean, I just think Mike Lane is such a great character. And I think for a long time I would have been like, Channing Tatum is Mike Lane and Mike Lane is Channing Tatum. It's like not really a performance. And I think if anything, this one really drove home what a like creation that Mike Lane is, and what a fun one at that. Mm. That they never really hesitate to like give you a little more information about Mike, that he like editorializes about stuff. I was really losing it at him saying he doesn't fuck with vegetables. And I was like,
yeah,
yes. Yeah, when have we ever seen Mike eat a vegetable?
Yeah. And then he's like, this is just genetics. And I was like, oh my God. Like they're just pretending that he is like a superhero.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, it's great that these characters get to be funny in a way that funny, good-humored adults are in their lives. He's not like overburdening them with jokes. He's just letting them be who they are. I think it's really beautiful. And I love basically like every female character in this movie, but I love their MC. I think she's so cool.
She rocks.
She is.
I want to see awesome. More from her. I don't remember. Is her name Zadie? Is that who it is?
That's got to be the name.
The actress is Jamelia George.
Zadie's the kid.
No, that's the dog. That's Zadie's the kid. Yeah, yeah.
Wait, who am I?
Hannah.
Who?
Juliet. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only other. Because it's not Edna.
Yeah. Juliet Muhammad.
Yeah.
She's rocks.
She's great.
I need to see more of her right away. And
also, kind of gives a little.
Yeah,
you could see her being a little bi.
Oh yeah, definitely. I like the daughter though too. I'll say.
Yeah,
my new thing is being like every kid who's ever been in a movie is good. I don't like the idea of being like this kid in this movie.
I like that. I think that's
you want to be supportive.
Very good take.
Yeah, I think that speaks to the teacher in you, Fran.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, that is
sweet, because if I was 10, I would be horrified.
Oh my God.
Of people thinking I'm bad in a movie.
Acting with Channing
Well,
Tatum,
I kept thinking
like
seven. The Razzies nominated that girly from the Firestarter
remake,
which is
was
so mean.
Really rude.
That's so fucked.
She's like 8. Like,
it's so gross.
Like, that's, come on. It's not her fault that movie does not have the juice, also.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're going to nominate anyone from that movie, nominate Zefron.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's cool. I want to see more of these cool small characters.
I'm curious to see if Channing develops like something next. I think I was reading
Mike Lane's over.
Well, that article, there is a quote about like him and Reed Carolyn and their company 33 and Out Productions. And their goal, it was formed for the goal of working as hard and having as much fun until they can, until their Jesus year. So that means basically until like they're done
33?
Or they die or they don't want to.
Wait, no, isn't it supposed to be 33?
Yeah, but they're all over 33.
Yeah.
So I'm so confused upon like what they're doing, but I'm curious to see how long he goes, because he went away for a while. Now he's seemingly back pretty hardcore, right, Channing? Because it's been like what?
Pussy Island.
Four movies within 2 years, and then another one this year or next year. Like, that's a lie, because he popped up in fucking Bullet Train, too.
Mm, great cameo. So, great fruity cameo. Nothing
extremely
better.
Extremely fruity
he
in Bullet
literally
Train.
Just shows up to be like, yeah, I fuck you, and then leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aaron Taylor Johnson, I see you.
I'm
fascinated about 33 and Out. Does it mean 33 years? Or does it mean
33
movies? That's sort of how I... Oh, true. I guess I assume 33 movies. Years. Because it's not like Jesus did 33 things. I think he did more, or maybe less, honestly.
Who's to say?
I'm like, which ones count?
who can really know? But that's
Channing
so,
going through the Bible
underlining. That's hilarious. It's like your Jordan year, but your fucking Jesus year when you're 33.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating.
I can't wrap my head around
The man, the
what
myth,
does that mean?
Who is he? I don't know.
Well, I am excited for what Channing Tatum has upcoming, Pussy Island. And then he's also in that Project Artemis movie that Berlanti is directing. It's the ScarJo, space race movie.
He'll be serious in that this is part of his shirt era now. Mm. So,
yeah.
It's sort of crazy he's not in... Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
Doesn't he just
Who
feel
isn't
like,
in Oppenheimer?
Yeah, it's sort of like, get him in the mix.
As opposed to Josh Peck, it should be Channing Tatum.
Isn't it crazy that Josh Peck has a speaking line in the Oppenheimer trailer?
In the trailer.
It's kind of bananas.
This project Artemis, movie, though, could be interesting.
Yeah.
Or maybe it will just disappear into the streaming black hole like almost everything. But like Channing Tatum replaced Chris Evans, which I feel like is like
interesting.
Big in a way. I would consider Channing a at least like B plus movie star in terms of like financing and stuff like that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, but like, that they what's were the, like, I guess that what's the right like, Tom is Tom A plus, and then you go like down from there.
Tom
Cruise.
Yes. But also like in terms of financeability.
Sure, sure, sure.
Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth.
I feel like Channing like maybe has more bang for his buck than Hemsworth. No?
I would say
I guess maybe 5 years ago he did.
Yeah. Fran says,
meh. I don't know now. He almost feels like an acquired taste now. Cause he's not Reddity, you know?
Yeah, he also like hasn't done a franchise necessarily. Like he hasn't done a superhero thing, right? So nope.
This is his franchise.
He wanted Gambit, and that never happened.
Oh yeah,
he took a Gambit.
We discussed that last time. Him and his weird Southern accent that he had planned.
Down on
the nice
bayou.
That there's a new Vanity Fair piece about him though. I'm gonna check it out. I also know so he famously has the rights to Ghost.
Yes,
like the reboot.
Oh,
yes.
Interesting.
And wants to do it.
Yes.
Right?
Like a modern, like a reinterpretation of Ghost that's more woke, apparently. So we'll see how that is. Not to be like woke, but like, I guess like he wants to modernize it.
He wants to modernize it in some way.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Sure. I've never actually seen Ghost.
No, me either.
I know there's a sexy pottery scene and that's all
I
know.
I've also never seen it. All I know is the sexy pottery scene and I think the Whoopi Goldberg, Girl, You in Danger is from that movie. Maybe not.
Sure. I don't know.
I only know it from its memes.
As all movies should be taken in.
Obviously.
Brooke, how is this movie doing on Letterboxd, though?
Great question. Yeah. I'm going to ask you
that
question. Fran, you are welcome to put in a guess, but not required. How do you think it's doing, Jordan?
Pretty bad.
Average-wise.
3-1.
Okay. Fran, would you care to put in a guess?
2-4.
Woof. It's a 2.9.
Oh.
So yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Not great, guys. It's not doing too great.
I mean, all of the movies have terrible Rotten Tomato scores, which is upsetting.
Also, XXL only has a 3.2 on Letterboxd.
That's
which
XXL
in my opinion,
has
is, like,
some like really dedicated haters, I have to say. I know two people whose opinions I broadly trust who like fucking hate that movie.
Likewise, actually. I mean, I'm not going to oust them.
Out them on mic.
No, it's Kayla and Noah from Secondhand Film Critics.
Yeah,
they both hate that movie.
Fucked up.
Our friends who we like and whose taste we trust.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. It is crazy.
They find it pretty, like, smug and I think not as inclusive as it claims to be.
Interesting.
I would take more movies set in this world. I think this is a really interesting world. So maybe I want to see the Big Dick Ritchie spinoff or whatever Soderbergh has up his sleeve. But I truly think that like the conversation surrounding stripping as or as not sex work and like the gray areas there and like continuing to dive into that world is super fucking fascinating to me.
I mean, I think that's what makes XXL excel. Is when like they go and like they keep like there's the whole Jada house.
Well, the
and
competition
then they,
is
right.
Like I'm obsessed with the
competition. And they go and like Elizabeth Banks is basically like TBT and like all everyone knows everyone in this world and it just feels like a giant like smorgasbord of dynamics, which I love and like feel there's so much to explore there.
Yeah, and then it is like healthy.
Yeah,
and interesting. Whereas number one is like drugs,
right? It's
crime.
Like Matthew McConaughey is terrible. Dallas sucks. Yeah,
everyone is bad and terrible. But yeah, so that's how it's doing. It's not doing great. I will say it's not doing amazingly box office wise either. Although it was number one this past weekend.
Let's
Valentine's
weekend
on opening weekend. To be fair, it was the only new release, so it would have been kind of embarrassing if it got beat by something else.
It was this in Titanic.
It was this, the Titanic re-release, and this only beat Avatar by a million for the weekend. So it came out on top, but it opened to 8 and Avatar opened to 7.2. So,
that is crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, damn. Not looking great for Mike Lane Custom Designs, but that's okay. We'll always we will still have his designs.
What do you think his next business investment is?
I wish that he had a different business like every movie, but he wants to build furniture. Like, that's what he wants to
do. He loves fucking furniture.
So I don't think he will stray from that dream, but maybe now that he has 60K in the bank, he can go do that.
No, he rejects the money at the end, right? Doesn't he say like,
oh, right, because she's broke.
Yeah, because she's broke. He's like, it doesn't matter.
She gives it all up.
Yeah. She gives it up for love.
That's okay. All right. Well, how are we feeling about this film on the QQ? I'm going to be honest. It's kind of rough. So I wanted to refresh myself.
What we gave Magic Mike's?
We gave to Magic Mike and XXL. We gave Magic Mike a 2 and XXL a 3.
Okay.
I'm going to give this one a hot 1.5. I can't give it just a 1. 1.5. Okay. 1.5 stars on the QQ for me. Honestly, maybe should be lower. But I feel like a 1 implies that there's like really nothing. Shitty representation, and there's not. It's just that there kind of isn't anything. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Jordan, what do you think?
I was gonna go 1.
You
but
can
I
go
guess,
1? I'm
I
just saying
if
for
it's
me
going
personally.
To be, no, you know what? I'll give it for the unicorn. I think Channing for sure wrote that line in that character. There's no world in which he didn't. I'm gonna say the MC is giving by, which we have to stan. And
Duet in the Rain.
Of course, is definitely like a bisexual awakening for maybe some young people in the audience. So I'll give it a 1.5 as well, but not great. Mike Lane, Fran, how do you feel?
I'll go 1.5. Seems to be about right.
Yeah. This was not meant to be a depressing episode. It wasn't a depressing episode.
No, we had fun. This is like a really philosophically chewy movie. I kind of can't believe
it is.
Yeah.
It's asking interesting questions.
That's why Soderbergh is the best. Like, I feel like it's very difficult to walk away from one of his movies and be like, great, like, and that to be the end of it. Yeah. There's always something to chew on, and I think that there is, like, a deceptive amount in this movie.
It also you leave the theater, I don't know, when the credits rolled, stoked. I was like, that fucking rocked. Like, that final, like, dance, whatever, sequence, I think is incredible. And, like, it does, I think that's what these movies do so well, is it does leave you feeling on a high, which I think is like a great thing for like I'm the one of the most upsetting parts of my life is I didn't see XXL in a theater.
Yeah.
And so like having to watch that high at home and like only turning to my cat to be like, wasn't that amazing? But like to finally see one of these movies in a theater and actually feel the crowd get excited about it was fun, you know?
Yeah. It was great. Everyone clapped for the Nicole Kidman AMC ad, so we knew
that's
that we were in good hands.
Yes. Yes.
As of this recording, we're going to see Cocaine Bear next weekend. And if the Nicole Kidman AMC applause is not uproarious, I will be
you walk out of the theater
shocked. That is now how I judge, not specifically like every audience, but like the film audience of a movie is the AMC.
It depends on the theater.
Nicole Kidman
too.
Response.
Yeah,
the best responses that I have had have been Tar, oddly enough, because
they were there to support the maestro.
It was just a bunch of cinephiles. And then The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent was fucking
interesting.
Bananas, because that's like a film Twitter movie. So
is that happening in New York as well? Or
well, I'm a Regal Crown Club member. Mm-hmm. I've seen that Nicole Kidman ad like twice in my life.
Wow. This is fascinating.
That commercial
there's like no,
I could means nothing to
recite
me.
Recite it for you right now.
There's no Regal. There's one Regal in LA and it's downtown and it's a pain in the ass to get to.
Yeah,
so really, you have to be an AMC
A-lister. AMC owns LA. It is insane how many AMCs are out here.
Yeah.
It does not have as much of a chokehold, but here's the thing is that the main Regal that I go to, I went to a different Regal because the times were better yesterday, but that Regal I mostly go to opened in like February of 2020 and remained like untouched until like summer 2021 when I started going there. So it has a very new theater feel to it. And
that's
it's
fun.
You're going, you can like still smell the paint.
Yeah. And like people, it's different now, but like for a really long time, it was like people really did not know it was open and that you could go. So it was just sort of always deserted. And we really liked that aspect of it. But the Regal commercial that you get before the movies is like, Regalheads really hate it. There's a camaraderie. It's whatever the opposite of emotion of what is engendered by the Nicole Kidman ad. It's really awful.
It's not like the roller coaster? Is that not
well,
there
the
anymore?
Roller coaster, yes. But then they do like a four Regal ad that is comprised of only lines from other movies.
Oh, I've seen that. That's really bad.
It's really bad. But it's like Stockholmed me into being like, it's amazing.
You've seen it too many. That's the thing. It's like the first time I saw the Nicole Kidman ad, I was like, what the fuck is this? And by the sixth time, it burns itself into your brain.
What's your favorite line in the Regal ad?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, my favorite line is the first line, which is the girl who walks in to the Regal theaters, who I think looks a little bit like Blank Check's Marie Bardi. So I'm always like, there's Marie. But she walks in and she like opens her hands like this and goes, it's all happening, which I now say all the time when something is happening. But I think there's also the most memorable line, which I think is the worst delivered line in it, which is a woman who just goes, she's beauty and she's grace. In a very sort of arch tone. And every single time I'm like, what movie is this from?
Dear God.
I mean, if I had to guess, I would say Miss Congeniality is immediately what came
it is,
to mind.
Which I haven't seen, but she delivers the line so poorly that I'm like, this could be from anything.
Not a particularly like notable line in Miss Congeniality because it's sung. Yeah. It's part of the song.
And it's definitely not sung. In this, I think there's also like an impetus of some people are paying an homage with their delivery of the line, and some people are like, I'm doing this my way, and there's no consistency with that.
I was paid SAG.
I can
union
understand
rate
why Regal heads might hate this
ad.
And Danny Trejo is in it. That's their like Nicole Kidman is Danny Trejo.
So when I went home for Christmas, the home theater where I grew up was a Regal, and I remember seeing that, but I did not the Regal used to do like those like college ones or whatever, where it's like these teens made this, and so I thought it was some sort of dream thing like that. Like I did not 16. Clock that before every Regal movie you have to see that. That is bananas.
I've seen it so many times. It's all happening.
Wow, discovering
it's all happening.
I'm gonna start using like you enter a Zoom. It's all happening. You walk into Trader Joe's.
It's all happening. The movies are back, baby. Here we are talking about pre-roll theater chain.
Nothing better.
Specificity. The movies are back. Live entertainment is back. Go see Magic Mike live.
True.
Go see Magic Mike's Last Dance. It's honestly kind of struggling. Yeah. So
I was in London and I did not see it. The show. I kept like my hotel. I would have to walk by the show and I kept seeing it. I was like, maybe I should go, and I never fucking went.
I'm gonna do my best to maybe try and see it in Vegas.
Do you
we'll
want
see.
A Vegas road trip?
Oh, we can have our own Magic Mike XXL.
Oh my God, we break down.
Fran, you're invited to come.
I'll, on my way.
Cross country.
We'll roll Molly and drive.
Great. Okay.
Great.
Love it.
Fran, thank you for chatting with us.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Oh my God.
Of course, you're always welcome back.
Anytime. What are you up to? Where can people find you? Give us the goods.
People can find me at Fran Magazine and my various sort of social media, which is just my name, Fran Hoffner, but I'm also kind of on posting sabbatical. So, you know,
as we all should be, honestly,
I don't even know why I'm doing this or how long it'll last, but, I'm kicking around on Fran Magazine and mostly Instagram, which is Fran Hoffner.
Love it.
Hell yeah.
Could not recommend Fran Magazine highly enough.
Agreed.
It is the highlight of my day whenever it lands in my inbox. It's so great, 'cause it's like, it's topics that I would truly am always interested in, but never am able to like have thoughts about.
Mm.
And then there you are with your thoughts.
Thank you.
I love it. And I also know so much more about classical music now.
I was just going to say, it is one of the
best
parts. I
did not
parts.
Know
that's,
anything.
That's like what I want. I want people to be able to like show up at the symphony and feel like they're not going to feel out of place.
There
you're
we
the
go.
Maestro of Substack.
Oh, that's so nice.
The Maxandra Mendoza, or
yes.
whatever her last name is,
yeah,
of Substack. It is Mendoza. I was right.
Look at you.
Friend Magazine for life. We are also kicking around on the internet.
Unfortunately, still posting.
Still on Twitter. It's not dead yet. I'm a Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Guss.
We're together at Queer Quadrant. And the same goes for Letterboxd and also for Instagram.
Oh, my God.
And you can find the podcast on Spotify, Apple, and wherever else you get your podcast.
A theater.
Yes. A dilapidated theater that we're trying to get back up and running. Hit us with a rate. 5 ponies.
Abs only.
Only.
5 ponies. Yeah, sure.
Why I don't not? Know. Drop us a review. Hit us with the good. Subscribe. Support our Mike Lane custom design aspirations.
You know the dance move? I did find this out during the Channing article, because when you said abs or ponies, when he's on all fours and he grinds, it's called Old Faithful is what he nicknamed it.
Listen, he does it really well.
5 Old Faithfuls only.
There we go. And you can tweet at us about your thoughts on that piece of trivia.
It's a good piece of trivia.
And
you'll definitely need it.
Might like to see us cover in the future.
And Brooke, what is happening in the future?
2 weeks from now, we are coming at you with Disney Pixar's Luca, an adorable little movie.
Mamma mia!
About some adorable little Italian fish.
Thank God.
Who are in love.
Yes. Good movie.
Yeah, great movie.
Great movie.
Can't wait to talk about it. So that will be hitting your ears in 2 weeks.
And Brooke, is there anything you'd like to leave our Mike Lang custom designers with?
The show is not about getting dick. Only. And I would say the same is true for this podcast.
Oh.